It's disgusting. If you read Genesis 19, it's scandalous for sure.
I am Catholic. We pay people to read the Bible for us. Hey folks, welcome back to our podcast. It's Everything That Rises, a podcast about the short stories of the one and only Flannery O'Connor. My name is John Meehan, with you this week as always. I'm an English teacher, a speaker, a writer, an author, and a nerd for books. And each week I bring smart people in to talk about smart books, and Flannery O'Connor writes a lot of them. So today I brought in a good friend of mine, and I'll have her introduce herself. You want to say hi?
Hi, I'm Julia Struckley, a friend of John's, long time friend, first time listener, first time podcast.
And how do you feel about this podcast thing? We're doing okay.
I'm into it. Now that I'm into it, the first one, I was a little nervous, but I think I'm into it. I am also a teacher, and we've been teaching for about the same amount of time. Yep. And I've taught high school, I've taught middle school, I teach theology, I also teach media literacy and journalism.
Goodness me. And you have multiple degrees, including things
I use the degrees that I teach now, which is amazing. Not many people can say that, but I have a bachelor's in media studies and then a master's in theology from Catholic U.
And a bachelor in media studies is kind of like a BA in English, which is like
it is a lot. If you're talking about literacy, like how to read the different mediums and different messages that were sent. So
love it. And so that's that. So we have Julia, who teaches again, knows the media literacy and the theology side of things. I teach literature, so I just basically say things really loud and swear that my interpretation of the story is correct. I don't know any of that is true. And we're diving in today to the second half of a short story called Circle in the Fire. Julia, can you catch readers or listeners up to speed in the first half of what we covered?
I can. I feel bad. I feel like I gave a little bit of spoiler, but I mean, it's a circle in the fire. It's kind of there in the title. But we got two women, Miss Pritchard, Miss Cope. They're total opposites. Miss Cope is the landowner, and she has a daughter who is named Sally. And then Mrs. Pritchard and Mrs. Cope are out in the yard one day, and they're talking, and three visitors come up to the land, and I think we kind of left it there. Mrs. Cope wants to feed them, invite them in. She wants to be the good Christian woman that she thinks that she is.
Yes.
And yeah, I think we'll leave it there.
I like that idea of a good Christian woman too. I'm reminded, of course, because everything in my life ties back to The Wizard of Oz. I need new stories, but
I'm like Gatsby, Oz.
Yeah,
I know it.
I'm very on brand for turn of the century stuff of American literature. Like, I teach American literature, so there's only so many, and they all kind of, there's one story. We just repeat it, right? It's about the class and race, and that's the American story. But in A Good Man,
Circle of Fire.
No.
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. I made a promise to go back to the story. At the beginning of that story, Elmira Gulch comes in and says Toto bit her, and that's the end of it, and she's gonna take her and have her destroyed. And Aunt Em tells Elmira Gulch, I've always considered myself a good Christian woman, and I've wanted to tell you for 30 years how I feel about you, but
yeah, being
a good Christian woman, I just can't bring myself to say how I feel about you.
I love that. She's a better woman than I am.
That's it. And we gotta talk about good Christian women here, because they're trying to do the good Christian thing to feed these kids and clothe these kids, or give them a place to stay, kind of, but not really.
Well, she's giving them what she thinks they need, and maybe not what they really need or want.
Yeah, she doesn't ever actually think to listen to them. So in the beginning is when we kind of picked up about midway through the story. There are three boys. There's a boy named Powell who has a wandering eye or lazy eye.
little Powell. Powell.
And then we have a boy named Ashfield. I'm sorry, Garfield.
Garfield.
He's very clear that his name is Garfield. He's the boy who's heavy set. And then we have another boy. And I think his name is Harper. Maybe I got that one right. It's been a minute since I probably should just look at my notes. Yes, W.T. Harper. Harper, Garfield, and Powell are these three misfits hanging out. And she yells at one of them, "Hey, stop smoking around my house. Take that cigarette butt and put it up away." And he puts it away, but he's not happy about it. And while he puts it away, she happens to notice that his 13-year-old body has a tattoo on his forearm.
Yeah.
If you made this story today, what would you change about this scene, if anything?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we've evolved as much as we think we have. Right. And there are other moments in the story where I do feel like we have evolved. There's a lot of questions of gender and talk and conversations about gender. And I don't know if you want to get into that a little bit later.
Yeah.
What they're talking about, like their teachers. And I don't know. Did you pick up on that? Maybe that's later.
When they get to those, that's a good question too.
Yeah. So in terms of like just describing the children, the tattoo, I think it still would be kind of startling to see a 13-year-old with a tattoo on their forearm. I don't know, especially in the South. And I don't know.
It's a little bit more, you know, just traditional, I guess. When I worked in the public school system in Prince George's County, I mean, a lot of my students had tattoos, and a lot of them were like done, you know, in the home or by a friend. They were not done in a professional tattoo parlor. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a sort of slight judgment here, being like in that glance, seeing that this is the type of kid who would think to get a tattoo is like a socioeconomic revolution.
Yeah, and I think that still exists today. I mean, I think it is regional, as you pointed out, but and there's tons of people with tattoos down here in Richmond now, but to still see it on a child down here, I think would be a little bit startling, especially in the world that Mrs. Cope lives in.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I will say that if I was staging it or casting it today, I wonder if there's a juxtaposition of race and class that would be more clear today. If you had like three students who show up and they're the same color as a woman who is like a landowner, it's like, what's the big deal? But if they were seen as othered, it would be a very quick like visual tell that these people are not from where you're from, and it's not the same. Because I think the racism is still very much alive, and the story sort of hints at that. It's not as overtly racially charged as some of the other things, but this is a clear class story.
Totally. I think you're absolutely right.
So they talk about remembering the place. They talk about, you know, enjoying their time while they were there. You know, why did you all leave? You know, whatever you do. And they remember there was a horse named Gene and a horse named George. And just sad that he can't ride those horses anymore.
The boys are all about the horses.
They are. Do you think there's symbolism to that? I don't know. I'm sure there is, but.
I mean, we got horses in Revelations, right? I mean, it's kind of the end times.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know if it's that literal. I don't know if I think these boys definitely represent something spiritual, but as you said in the last episode, I don't know if it's so clear cut as like, they're totally good or they're totally bad, you know?
That's a good point.
But
that's a great point. I don't know, and I think it. But he does use the cuss word. God damn, it was a horse down there named Gene. If I had him, I'd bust this concrete to hell riding him. Miss Cope is bothered by the use of the word hell and the word goddamn there. She would.
Yeah,
right. She's cool with like fat boy with the arm tattoo using the cuss words, and like the skinny wise ass kid.
But not Powell.
But not Powell. I'm surely sure not Powell doesn't use words like that. Do you, Powell? Like, I don't know. It feels as if he's being condescended to here a little bit.
Well, let's talk about it. So it's his father that was the one that worked on the farm, correct? So maybe that's because it's interesting, because in the beginning, she doesn't recognize him and doesn't know him. But now that she comes to understand that his father worked for her, then maybe that's like he should surely have a higher standard, because he should know better, because he was raised on this farm and on her property. So that's why she holds him to a higher standard.
It's like a reflection on her. If
exactly.
He turns out bad,
yeah. It has nothing to do with none of this has anything to do with them. It's all about her.
Wow. That's so myopic. That's so not good.
well, it's not Christian.
But it is, though. I mean, like it's not what Christian's supposed to be, right? It's what Christian settles to be. So they're talking very quickly about how they're from tenement houses, you know, four stories high, 10 of them, one behind the other. Let's go see them horses. And then they're talking about the fact that they were dropped off in town by, quote, their uncle, who brought us up in a pickup truck. Then he's going to stop by for us again in the morning. I don't know. I've read enough literature. I've seen enough stories when someone says, I promise this is going to happen tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Right?
Like, we don't have to give any spoilers. I feel like a lot of this is like, you know what's coming. But to go back to my
book before, right? Yeah.
To go back to my Genesis thing, though, and I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but there is that the uncle relationship with Abraham as well. So like the three visitors come to tell him that they are going to go to where his nephew is and kind of destroy the place, Sodom. And I'm reading into this, but I'm just like, oh, uncles, nephews.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Well, but like Sodom, if for those who are uninitiated, unhip.
Sorry. You asked me to come on this podcast. I did.
I'm very sorry. So I should point out, like, you don't have
I
to be Catholic.
Scripture.
But like, there's that Sodom is a biblical city, which is known for its debauchery. Is that a it's fairly.
It's disgusting. If you read Genesis 19, it's scandalous for sure.
I am Catholic. We pay people to read the Bible for us. Thank you. But if Sodom is a city full of sin, these people are sent and they pass through with the intention that they're going to destroy it, right? So there's this image of like destroying the city on the hill, this ivory tower kind of thing. And she says she won't let him hang out by the horses. Can't do that. Horses are unshod. It's not safe. You'll fall. You'll break your head. Also, the barn's full of hay, and I'm afraid of the fire of your cigarettes. So she's like,
and they're
no.
like, we won't smoke. We promise. And they have fingers yeah. crossed behind there. I mean, you just know.
Right. It's like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, right? You can kind of see this, like, you know, we brought our own blankets. Come on, we'll just go out there in the woods. And then she freaks out. She's like, no, the woods are super dry. Can't have people smoke in the woods. You can put them out in a field, in this field next to the house where there aren't any trees. But meanwhile, Sally Virginia is like where she can keep her eye on you. Like,
yeah,
it's like she doesn't want to put them up in her living quarters. She won't let them stay in the stable when they're like, fine, I don't want any part of your house. I'll just hang out in the woods. That's like so much worse because that's like out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, it's out of her sight. Do you think other than that kind of literal interpretation, like does the field represent anything else?
I was thinking of so you can tell me like if I'm off base here. I was thinking of the nativity story where like
yep
they wanted to have the yep. baby but there was no room in the inn, so like they have to settle down in the stables. Like that was where my mm-hmm. brain went here, right?
Yeah, and also like in the nativity story too, like the angels come to the shepherds in the field and announce like I mean to them, and like the shepherds were looked down upon, like the shepherds were smelly, they hung out with animals all day, they were outcasts, and yeah. yet they're in the field and they're the ones that get the message from God. So I feel like there's a lot of that here.
Interesting. I think you're right. I don't know that I'm
I might be reading way too much into it. No, I think we're all on the right track.
Hooray. So when they offered him food and drinks or whatever like that, you know, Mrs. Cope says he only played with what we gave him to eat. And then Mrs. Pritchard suggests, because she needs to get a pot shut in, they may not like soft drinks. Like the word soft there is italicized because they would like hard liquor at their 13 years. Like, and that's really funny. Like these are a hard company. Like there's a rough crowd that Powell keeps. And so it's like, yeah, they're not up to good stuff. And they take off for the woods or they take off for the stables. And she's like, oh. But they're going to stay overnight. She offers them cold guinea.
Yeah. Like
turns out it's like guinea fowl or guinea hen or something.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
A bird. Yeah.
It's like a bird. And Flannery O'Connor knows birds, so I'm sure she's on like a nickname basis with whatever it is. But like they flat tell her, I don't want that. I would yep. have chicken or turkey, but I don't want yep. guinea. And they're like, nope, too bad. Don't care. And she's like, well, this is what I got. And she's like, the dog wouldn't eat any of that stuff. Like,
yeah, and that's interesting. I think it's, I don't know if it's just like who's in the wrong here. I think she's definitely in the wrong for not listening to them and not trying to meet their needs and forcing her own ideals on them. But yes. I mean, they're being a little rude too. I'll go ahead and say that.
But I'm going to pick. I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. My principal famously says that the devil doesn't need an advocate; the students do. Like, let me be the advocate for these kids here. Yeah. Yeah, right. Like they are not treated as people. They're treated yeah. as like an obligation and like as yeah. a guilty, fine, roll my eyes, whatever. So like she wasn't
yeah,
kind
fair.
To them.
Yeah. Like, no, you're right. She's judging them. Absolutely. And they can feel that. They can say that. In my years of teaching, I definitely, one of the first things I learned is that the kids, they're not dumb. They can pick up on anything. Right. They can sense fear. They can sense your insecurities. And I think that they pick up on all of that in her. They can smell a phony and they know that she's a phony.
And I think that line about like they'd rather starve than eat her bread. You know, like there's something about this that says I would rather not eat anything if it means mm-hmm. I have to eat something that came from you. Because if it has this string attached to it, like I'm gonna say no. I'd rather starve than eat it.
But so like if they, you know, the Paula was on her farm and knew this, and they knew of the horses. Do you think that they remembered this about? I mean, he remembered her.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't know. I think he.
Do you
is...
know? I mean, he knew what he was getting into then. If
well,
he knows
but
her.
Like, again, I'm gonna be the advocate for the kid, right? Like,
that's great.
Someone
told
me one time that I'm such an empath and such a wuss. Like,
you're a good teacher.
Anytime you see a kid acting up or acting out, like they're asking for your help in maybe the worst way possible. And when you learn more about what is eating at or what is ailing that kid, it won't make you angry. It'll break your heart.
Totally.
Like, with this Powell kid. He says his mom's married again, like as if, well, that's just his life now. He's been all but forgotten. And he comes here to like forget the fact that he's poor white trash from the tenements, and he just wants a place that, like, when he was a kid, oh, wasn't that fun? Maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. Yeah, I remember this place.
Yeah.
Hoping that he can kind of be received back into this kingdom. Not unlike a prodigal son, but you don't have to push that too hard. And instead, like, of, you know, killing the fatted calf and, like, giving you the best of the best, it's like, I'll give you cold guinea and, I don't know, sleep in a barn? Well, I'll sleep in the woods. You know, like, it doesn't feel like you were welcomed home with open arms. So it's like...
Oh, totally. Yeah. And look at you with the scripture reference again. There's absolutely, like, prodigal son vibes in this. For sure.
There are like 3 stories Catholics know.
That's one of them. We know that really well. Yep.
So again, like, you know, second sign. So they come back in, and the little boy with a mouth, Harper, is like, you know, she asked you if your mother worked, pal. His mind's affected by them horse he only looked at. His mother, she works at a factory, leaves him to mind him, you know, mind the rest of them. Only he don't mind them so much. Let me tell you, lady, one time he locked his little brother in a box and set it on fire. There's your sign. Like, let this kid in. But as you said earlier, because his behavior, because he was sort of owned by her by proxy, because she had his father working for her, like, it's a bad reflection on her if this boy has a mean streak or a bad streak. I'm sure Powell wouldn't do a thing like that. It's like a leading question. Like, she doesn't let him be seen for who he is. She sees him for what she wants him to be.
Absolutely. And I just feel like that theme, again, I said this in the last episode, but I just feel like I know this woman. I feel like this woman still exists. I feel like we all, you know, and it's sad for better or for worse, but I feel like, and we all maybe have a little bit of her in us, you know, even though we don't want to or want to admit it.
Yeah. But I'm talking about food here. I'm talking about imagery, and this is good. They said after they ate this plate of sandwiches, setting it down the step, they emptied the plate at once, and she picked it up and stood holding it. And I'm thinking of this plate because it's they haven't described it as any other type of plate. I'm thinking it's like a white, like, piece of china. They emptied the plate at once, and she picked it up and stood holding it, looking at the sun, which was going down in front of them, almost on top of the tree line. It was swollen and flame-colored and hung in a net of ragged clouds. If it might burn through any second and fall into the woods. In my head here, it's like she has this white circle, and she's holding it up while the sky is red and burning around. Talk about a circle in the fire, because Flannery O'Connor is a diehard crazy Catholic. That to me feels like communion, like the Eucharist, the symbol of like the real presence, as Catholics believe, of Jesus is right there in her hand, but she's missing the sign. It's like happening all around her.
And also that, you know, that she thinks that she is in that position to be the one to hold that up. I mean, we as Catholics too revere that as very sacred, and it's not just something that you can, you know, not anybody can just, you have to be in a certain state of grace to receive it.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and she's just kind of like holding it up for show. And that's not really her place to do that in the state that she's in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. And I think there's 2 points here. One, yes, we're English teachers and religion teachers, so we're probably reading too far into everything. But immediately her next line is going into God.
There's so much to be thankful for. And Eucharist literally means Thanksgiving. Like, that's the Greek.
Oh, Thanksgiving. Oh, we're dropping Greek bombs up in here. Let's go.
I mean, I know like 2 Greek words, so.
Let's go. Greek words. Okay. But I was listening to a podcast or a video about Flannery O'Connor, and she was out to dinner with a friend in New York City, which is like the height of all things not Southern. And while she had this really nice dinner, she hadn't said much. Friend was describing herself as a lapsed Catholic or an ex-Catholic, but she says she still reveres the Eucharist because, you know, all the symbolism. Like, she appreciates the symbol of it. And then very quietly, Flannery O'Connor says, you know, is rumored to have said, well, if it's just a symbol, then the hell with it. Like,
yeah.
And that's it. Like, for her, there's no, I appreciate, you know, like, what this represents. And she's a very symbolic author, but there's no symbolism in this thing. It is either the real presence you believe, or it's not the real presence you don't believe.
Yeah.
And so as you're like, paying lip service is the worst thing you could do.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. I feel like there's something very, like, she obviously reveres it. And this woman, I think, is missing the point. The character, Mrs. Cope, is pretending, you know, she's has this fake piety.
And that's, I mean, that's sort of what spells her doom here. They say the kids are, you know, when they hear that, it puts an instant hush over them, and they've bitten their sandwiches if they lost all taste for food. They were silent as thieves in hiding.
Yeah, they just, they're sick. And I think, so do you think that they sense that fact that she's kind of like playing, I don't know, like this priest or this minister in this moment, and they like totally can call out the phoniness of it?
Yeah,
like, do you think that's why they,
I do. And I think at a certain point, if they were already on the fence about being good guys or bad guys,
now it's the nails in the coffin.
Right. And like, you know, this girl upstairs, you know, is like hearing this whole thing while mom's
Sally.
Well, I know I do. The sun burned so fast. It was trying to set everything on sight on fire. Like, meanwhile, the girl upstairs is crossing her eyes, trying to like look ugly as she can to be like, blah, like kill me now. And it says that she's crossing her eyes. Talking about crossing. And then the next line, the large boy looks up. Oh, Jesus, another woman.
Yeah, like, so here goes the gender thing. So I'm interested to see if we could talk about the gender, because there's a moment too where they're talking about their teachers. And, you know, as a female teacher, it's, and I know back then that was very much a like a, well, was it? Was it more female teachers at the time or more male?
More teachers? lady teaching than men teaching.
That's what I thought.
Especially in the primary grades and working through. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's this question of like, well, do you have male teachers or female teachers? And then they're like, it's kind of hard to tell. And I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. I mean, in our PC,
it's nothing kind.
Yeah, it's not good. it's not PC.
They're not very like inclusive. Like, well, you know, anybody can be anybody. They're saying, my men look effeminate and my lady teachers look slovenly.
Right. And then there's many moments where I feel like they are kind of looking down on women, and maybe just me as a woman like picked up very much on that. But, you know, here he's saying, ugh, another woman. When the girl comes down, the daughter comes down. And then later on, you know, there's this kind of male versus women battle that happens.
And when Sally kind of marches off into the woods, it's like with like a mock male sort of dress up kind of play there. Now that you're bringing the point to it, I agree.
So I wonder do you know much about Flannery O'Connor? I mean, she's obviously a woman of her time. Was she progressive in any way in terms of gender?
You know, I'm gonna have to look this up. So this is one of those things that you ask a student,
because reading this, I'm thinking no. And you know what I'm getting from this is that that I don't know. It's not as severe as other stories, but if the girl has to dress up like a boy to get her point across.
Yeah. I think that's how I'm reading it here, is it's a reflection or not maybe an indictment, but a commentary on women get no respect in a time where like it's a masculine South and like the toxic male version of the old South and like these rough and tumble like characters. I think that in some ways Flannery O'Connor holds female characters to a higher standard and says, you are where grace comes from. Like, and if you believe in the incarnation, like, you know, if you believe in the Blessed Mother, like it's through your weak human self that you can still be perfect and holy. Mary is unlike Jesus in that she's not God, right? She has a chance to be fully human and at the same time, like, in touch with, like, what it means to be holy. You don't have to be a magical, special, like, you know, plucked from the sky and dropped onto the planet to do that. It's like, no, that's possible for people. I think she looks to women as, like, a chance for salvation for...
That's beautiful. Know. I mean, I love that. I hadn't thought about that. Because what I'm getting more from this is that, you know, Eve is who brought in sin into this world, and so the women are looked down upon and cursed. But I like your interpretation better. Well, obviously,
all right. I'll use mine. I don't know. That's a good question. But I think that Jesus, another woman, like these guys are just—they have no respect for the three ladies now in the house, and it's three ladies and three men, and the men are clearly up to no good. The women appear to be doing good, but there's something about them that's up to no good too. So like, you know, Sally comes down and then says, you know, if I had seen that big boy down there, I would have beat the daylights out of him. Like, just shut up, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're going to go away. They'll be out in the morning. But paragraph all by itself. But in the morning, they were not gone. and we things are about to get bad. So like now she's trying her same old tricks. You want some food, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Not having any of it. Then after all, once they start acting up, you know, like, look. She keeps her eyes on Powell. You boys know I'm very glad to have you. Not true, but she said it anyway. But I expect you to behave. I expect you to act like gentlemen. After all, she says in a suddenly high voice, this is my place.
Yeah, there's several times where the boys are always like, oh, it's her woods, don't you? And they're making fun of her because she says, those are my woods. This is my house. This is my land. And they call her out on it, like, oh, her woods, and look down upon her, because that is that false... That, I mean, and we'll get there, but like that's ultimately the moral. Like, nothing is really ours; it's God's, you know. And I think we're right about there, right? When
because I mean, like they go running roughshod
the
over
one
her,
says,
right?
Yeah, man, God owns them woods and her too. Right. Yeah, like it's not, you know, God owns everything, and the fact that they recognize that when they're being looked down upon and judged, but they recognize like what is the truth that that no one really owns anything. None of this is ours. Anything could be taken away from us at any time, our lives, anything. Mm-hmm. They recognize that when she doesn't.
Yeah. I reckon she owns the sky over this place too. Like if no airplane can go over without her saying so. Like,
yeah,
they're just upset that this illusion of control, and in truth, like, Mrs. Cope doesn't have a husband that we see in this story. I believe that she doesn't have a husband because they haven't mentioned it. Mrs. Pritchard is a hired hand, and so Mrs. Cope has to, like, ask her to do things, but she doesn't, like, have any clout, you know, to kind of do it by herself. And Mr. Pritchard is, like, a hired hand, not so different than Mr. Boyd was a hired hand, Powell's dad. So he's of a lower working class, at least in the eyes of Mrs. Cope. So, like, who's going to tell these kids, hey, knock it off, and make them do it? Nobody. They're going to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, but she expects more of them. She thinks that because, again, good to go back, like, that because the one was on her land at one point in time, that they should know better. And she says that several times. Like, you gentlemen know better, and I expect you to be, like, behave that like this. Okay, so where do we go from here?
At a certain point, they're frustrated that the kids are goofing around. They're goofing out back and forth. They're riding the horses. They're letting the bull out. I mean, it's just like they're doing a bunch of stuff that like kids are.
And they're not leaving.
And
the uncle has not shown up yet. And Mrs. Pritchard is the one who knew. Mrs. Pritchard knew, like, you know, you see them with suitcases. They're not going anywhere. They're staying.
Correct. So they're like, well, now we're pissed, and it's the end of things. You know, I've been very nice to you boys. You know, I fed you twice. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going into town, and if you're still here when I come back, I'll call the sheriff. Like, you should have called the sheriff 3 days ago. Like, when you first saw them show up on your property, you should have said, this feels, you know, something's off. You didn't. Then you let them in. Now it's day two, and they're still hanging around. You're like, okay, well, by tomorrow, I'll call the sheriff. Like, that's not going to go well. And what they did, which is brilliant and evil, is they sit across the street from her house and they're throwing rocks at her mailbox. Like, if you ever have, I mean, I know you have a sister, but like, if you ever have brothers and sisters who fight, you do that thing where like, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. Like,
yeah,
you're standing right next to them.
Yeah.
Right?
They're like, across the street from her.
Doing it just to be mean. Because like, at this point, you know, what has she done to, she points out the things that she's done, quote, to be kind, but they're not kind. They're not at all.
Totally like a teacher moment, and you are a great teacher because you see deep down what the child is maybe struggling with, or understand that there's something going on deeper there. But yeah, if they sense any kind of weakness in you or any kind of phony, like, I mean, they are going to, like, I think about a substitute teacher, right? Like, they just are gonna, if they find that she's not legit or he's not legit, then
yes,
then it's hell's gonna break loose. And yeah, if you don't establish your proper authority from the start. And so I think that's where she maybe went wrong. She was trying to put on airs, trying to put on a show for them, and she wasn't real with them. And so now she's going to pay for it.
Well, you said, you know, hell's going to break loose. There's a line in here that says,
there we go.
Know,
yeah. Circle in the fire.
There it is, right? Boom. It all comes back. Mr. Pritchard comes to say that she had heard a high, vicious laugh pierce over the bushes of the hog pen. It was an evil laugh, full of calculated meanness. And she had heard it come three times herself distinctly. I'm thinking about like, Peter denying Jesus three times and like everything that happened in the Bible three times.
There's a lot of number symbolism in this, for sure. Like there's a whole passage where they've let out the one bull and there's four geese behind the bull. And then there's the two servants that are like chasing these number of geese and bull. And then there's the boys have let the oil out of three tractors. And then her two blue veins on either side of her forehead start to like kind of like protrude. And so I don't know, they're totally symbolic in the scripture. So what are you
thinking of like Revelations, like the book you don't read before bedtime because it's going to give you nightmares?
Yeah,
because it's like suddenly there are dragons. Wait, there are dragons in the Bible?
Yeah, there's a dragon. Heads. Why not? The dragon's got six heads, and there's four horsemen, and there's four creatures. Yeah,
and like everything, you know, the seventh trumpet, the seventh seal, and it's like all of these signs of the apocalypse, the end times, are kind of swirling and whirling while the sun is looking red and ugly and angry. And then you have these three harbingers of death who show up and like, oh, just kidding. You're not going to treat them as company. You're going to treat them as strangers. Make them go sleep in a barn. All right, here's your sign. And now it's laugh, 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 ha, ha, ha. It's about to get really bad.
Exactly.
She tries to like coach them back in, like yell them back in. She began to tell the children how much they had to be thankful for. For she said they might have had to live in a development themselves. They might have been like Negroes who might have been in iron lungs. They might have been Europeans ridden in boxcars like cattle. You get a litany of her blessings. Like, all you're doing is putting flames on the fire. Like, it's mm-hmm. gonna be bad. Mm-hmm. And they talk about, again, the trees in the distance. This is the second time now they just talk about trees in the distance, like a fortress line. Like, your kingdom is about to fall down. The whole thing is being overcome, and it's being come because you let them in and you didn't see it before it was too late.
Yeah. So now we have this kind of showdown between the three women. So the child gets in on this at some point. The child got in too, and the three, they're going in the car, right? They're going to go chase them down. Right. So the three women are in the car chasing after the three boys. And this is kind of where I was like, I don't know, getting in the gender again. Like, is she saying that the women are in the wrong and the guys are in the right? But I think what you said earlier is that there is no good, or there's no black or white. There's no good or bad. You know, they all have a little bit of both, like a yin and a yang. Yeah. Right. Okay. Because yeah. when I initially read this, I was like, she's saying that the women are like the evil ones coming. And because again, I had that vision of like the three are like the visitors. They're the good ones. They're teaching her. They're, I don't know, but you're right. They're.
I think that know. Again, like, and that's a very Catholic way of looking at things. Like, everyone has a chance. Like, we are called, we are chosen, we are Christ for one another. Right. Like, you, even though you are weak and fallen, can make me less weak and yes. more fixed.
Yeah.
And I, in my own messed upness, still have the ability to be like pointing you to something that is better.
Yeah, I agree. I think that she's really pulling out that like those that we perceive are broken. And this is a very Catholic thing. If you really look into it, I don't think it gets much cred, but I mean, that we should be learning from the other, and we see that in each other, and yeah. we're all broken in our own way. And so, yeah, she's definitely seeing that, like I say, that the broken can teach. You know, and they're all broken. The perceived good are also not all good.
Well, I love this too, because what it's setting up, and without doing it on purpose, the old Western movies like had the guys in the white hats, which are the good guys, and the black mm-hmm. hats, which are the bad guys.
Good. Let's talk colors. Let's talk about it.
Good, because we have this scene where like there's this gal who now, Sally Virginia, dresses herself up with a pair of overalls over her dress, pulled on an old man's felt hat as down as it can go. And then it has like its silver holsters, two mm-hmm. pistols. Like, she's about to go march off into the, you know, say, squeezing the redness out of her face. And then her mom looks at her like, why do you look like an idiot?
Yeah.
What if company used to come? Surely, I swear, you look like you belong to Mrs. Pritchard. Like, there's a judgment, right? Like,
totally.
You're not even my kid. You're like less than, because you're a little too tomboy or a little too masculine or whatever like that. And I get it that they're toy guns, but even in the first read, look, if 13-year-olds have tattoos, I'm still trying to figure out whether that gun is loaded here, you know, before I realize they're like, oh, they're pop guns, or they're Playboy, they're play guns. But yeah, I mean, like, this scene is about to get bad, and then Flannery O'Connor gives us these three dots, letting us know that, like, we're headed down to that showdown at the OK Corral, right? Where, like, the white hats and the black hats, the sun had risen a little, there's only a white hole opening for the wind, like a little sky darker than itself. The tops of the trees were black against the glare. I'm going to line you boys up and beat you black and blue. Line up, line up. Like, here we go. It feels like something bad is about to happen. I thought for sure when first reading this, this girl's going to get killed.
Really? I didn't necessarily think that. I mean, I just kind of knew that something is going to catch on fire. Someone, something is going to get caught on fire. But I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know with the gun thing, maybe that she would shoot them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, like, yeah. And I'm an idiot, so I was like, oh, she has guns. Mom didn't stop her. It's the South. That makes sense.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, mom has, you know, been kind of in this way emasculated, right? Like, she has no authority to sort of tell the daughter what to do. Daughter goes off and does what she wants to do. Daughter has no love for mom, at least through most of the story. Mm-hmm. And she goes in and she's like ready to go, guns blazing. And I thought for sure, like, and that's how one kid gets shot. Or in this case, the girl who brings the gun, you know, accidentally shoots herself. And I was like, oh, that'd be awful. But it wouldn't be out of you know, the realm of possibility here.
Yeah, that's not what happens, though.
No, it doesn't happen. So walk us through. So let's get it here, because now she kind of walks in on the boys having, like, what's it, naked bath time there in, like, the
trough. Yeah, that's actually, I think, what I was like. Is she going to see something that, I don't know, like, is she going to be awakened, or is there some kind of, like, I don't know, coming right. of age thing that's going to happen here? But yeah, no. So it's they're still holding on to, I think, the fantasy of the field, right? And I wish I lived here. I'm glad I don't. They're kind of like still arguing and talking about it. Yeah.
Not just glad I don't. I'm goddamn glad I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Like, But then do they see her right away? So the child behind the tree, she's hiding still. They don't see her.
I don't think they ever see her.
But they begin to run.
Well, so like they're talking about like, you know, I wish I would lived here. I wish I didn't live here. You know,
and then one of them wants to build a parking lot on the on the land. That also kind of like struck me too. Like, is he being like out of all this place that they think is so beautiful and like paradise, and they want to build a park, like build paradise, put a parking lot. Like that's
very Joni Mitchell, right?
That's before her time though. Flannery O'Connor would have known that. But that's interesting. I don't know what do you think he means by that?
I think it's Frankenstein's monster in you know, like if I cannot inspire love, then I will inspire fear. Like if I can't feel love, like I sought to be loved. Like the monster in the Frankenstein is much more intelligent than like the Hollywood depictions of him, you know, right? So he's articulate. He writes whole chapters from his first person perspective.
And or maybe they don't be loved. Because the way that they were treated, the boys, because I think it's the younger one who says that, like, this place isn't worth anything. If I had this land, I probably would just put a parking
lot. And I think that's it. It's like that monster inside is awakened by the fact that it was mistreated. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? If you don't love me, what is this place worth? If this place wasn't here anymore, you wouldn't have to think of it again. He says it looks straight ahead like a ghost sprung upright in his coffin. Like,
yeah.
As if, hey, you know what? If it's rejecting you, if it's giving you bad memories and it's controlling the way that you feel about yourself and like the fact that you don't have positive memories from your own childhood, burn this thing to the ground, man. Like, who cares?
Yeah. So that's when Powell, I think that Naked Time is over and I think they can trust.
Naked Time is over. But I also think that Naked Time in the Woods reminds me of like the first scene in The Crucible where like they go out into the woods and do bad things and dance naked in the woods with the devil. Like, this is a very like pagan sort of ritual. Like, you know,
well, it goes back to Genesis then for me too. Like the Sodom thing, it was totally like, I mean, this isn't that bad, but it was like debauchery, like at the worst, you know? And so, okay. So they're done with that. Right. And then there's, and Sally's still kind of watching. She's watching and she's going to see what they're going to do.
Right.
And Mrs. Cope and Miss Pritchard are in the field behind the barn. Again, the field is the place where they were like allowed, the outcasts were like allowed, or, you know, to go. And they suddenly see smoke rising from the woods, John. We knew it was going to happen all the way back at the beginning.
We did. I mean, but we also read a book or two, which might make us different than the characters of this novel.
Can we talk about how, like, Sally's just like, she comes running and she goes, Mom, they're going to build a parking lot there. Like, they totally missed the fire part. It's like more about the conversation. And
I have so many thoughts about this thing here, which is like, all right, so. Thankfully, Naked Time is over and they do begin to dress, but it's like, it takes them 2 pages to get the dressing done. I was worried that like in the end, they're lighting fires and running around naked, like, you know, like this like, you know, pagan festival from hell, like all these kids are just like naked dancing time, which is terrifying. 13-year-old boys with arm tattoos, cigarettes, and like, it's very unsettling. It's unseemly. But this girl sees this and there is an awakening there. It's a low key, not sexual awakening, but it's a coming of age moment where you realize the world is dark. Okay. She came in pretending to be violent.
I wasn't like, too far off then. Then it's good.
No, I don't think so.
I picked up on that. Yeah.
Like she comes in, talk about like dressing like a man, even though she's a girl. And then she gets to see boys out in the woods and they look very different than she does. Right. So like dressing up and dressing down, like I think there's something to that for sure. But then she sees this implied violence, this pretend violence. She carries these pop guns. But then she sees this very real violence. We're like, screw it, we're gonna burn this whole thing down. And like that smoke is enough to like shake her into a moment of, for Sally Virginia, I don't know, maybe I'm reaching here, but like I feel that she is maybe the most redeemed character in all of this. Because she shrieks and she runs up. And for the first time, she's not dismissive of her mother. She says, Mama, Mama, they're gonna build a parking lot here. Like it's so innocent, it's so kid-like. And then she like looks up at her mom with like pain and fear and closeness. And it says that the child came to a stop beside her mother and stared up at her face as if she'd never seen it before. It was a face of the new misery she felt, but on her mother, it looked old. It looked as if it might've
been. Yeah, I love that line.
Like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
There's a closeness now that in this moment of like, you're about to lose everything, that you realize
Well, because she thinks she's fine. She's, like you said, she's finally seeing her mother like for the first time as she is. Because I think for a while she knew that she thought that she was like this phony, and she knew she was a phony and putting on airs. And now you see the brokenness inside of her, and Sally can see that too. So going back to the point that like there's this perceived brokenness, all these boys are broken because they have tattoos and whatever and they're poor. But really her mom, we know the whole time, was broken, and now Sally can finally see that too. And that Mrs. Cope wasn't necessarily pure evil. Like she was broken, and she was always trying to hide that fact. And now it's totally exposed because her fear has come true, you know?
So she's almost in some ways like overcompensating through the story, like trying to put on like, has it together. And now like, oh man, but it's shifting sympathies. This is such a good story.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Because now I'm
so glad I picked it. It's great.
Oh yeah. Damn it. All right. That sucks. Because now I want clean yes, no answers. I want rights and wrongs. I want good guys and bad guys. And she's like, no, I'm going to do this. Because like, if she's just trying to cope, Mrs. Cope, right? She's a single mom, raising a daughter, right? She's doing the best she can. She knows she has no real authority over anybody. She's just trying to like do the best she can with the tricks that she has up her sleeve, which is being a good Southern woman, like making food for people, trying to just keep people to like play by the pleasantries, to be nice. And immediately she freaks out and she goes right back to the trick that she knows, which is, I don't take care of things myself. I call to the servants. She begins to scream for the Negroes, Mr. Pritchard, and she tells them, you know, like to stop spreading the manure, which is not unimportant, and hurry, start throwing dirt on it. Like, hurry, don't you see it? And they're like, it'll be there when we get there. Like, they put their shoulders forward, like they're hurrying to get there. But you have a wildfire about to blaze out of control. A little bit of dirt now or 3 minutes from now won't be the difference.
It's not going to matter. Yeah.
No. Like,
and also, I mean, she's mistreated them for so long now, and not, and now they're going to be of use to her. Like, she's talking about how lazy they are in the first part. And now, I mean, they're going to totally saunter over. You call me lazy? I'm going to show you. Like, yeah.
And I mean, like, at a certain point, like, joke's on you, lady. You were unkind to me earlier. We said I took a little too long to go the other way. It's like the one autonomy or freedom that the slave type people have on her land is the ability to at least go about their day in the way that they please doing it. We then turn around and we're like, oh, wait, they're shoveling poop? Well, that sucks. Their life is not happy. And she yells at him for not lifting the blades up, going as fast through the gate, whatever it looks like. And it's like, well, this is what you get. You reap what you sow. Like, she had been kind of a bad boss or a bad person. And so now no one's rushing to like save her from the fire.
No, absolutely not.
So what do you make of this scene at the very end here too? It says, you know, it says, I love this line. It says, it looked to the face of new misery she felt, but on her mother, it looked old, and it looked as if it might have belonged to anybody, a Negro or a European or to Powell himself. There's something that's very universal there.
Yeah, like, that's exactly what I was going to say too. And, you know, Catholic little c, universal. But I mean, I think that is exactly it. Like what we've been saying is that it's perceived that the poor or the marginalized are, you know, are seen a certain way, and that she feels like she has to put on airs to be seen in an opposite way. But we all deep down are human. And so there is that. It doesn't matter gender, color, race, you know, ethnicity. It's, we're all the same. And I think that is that moment where she and Sally finally maybe, but then you said like, she starts to cover it up real quick. She tries to cope and goes back to her old coping skills, but that's very human of us too. We have vulnerabilities, you know, we don't want them to be seen necessarily. So we go back to our old ways, unfortunately. But
so as we finish this story, talking about the prophecy, like this sign at the end, you know, she sees these few wild high shrieks of joy as if the prophets were dancing in the fiery furnace and the circle the angel had cleared for them.
That's the Shadrach, Meshach. Yeah, that's the Nebuchadnezzar. Right? Yeah, exactly. Like,
he's the king. He looks in the fire. He sees the three of them. But if I remember the story correctly, doesn't he see four shadows in the fire?
He does, like, because God is the angel. They're protecting them from the fire, so they don't burn up. And so, again, it's back to, like, the guys are better than we thought, you know, that that they still have good in them as well, and they are worth – you talk about redemption and salvation, like – they're worth saving, and God does save them and protect them. Anyways, that's what I make of it.
I think you're right. I think you're right on the money. So as we close the story out, do you have more questions than answers? Do you have, like, you know, runner's up on base, things to?
I think we did a good back and forth. I feel like, I mean, I don't have all the answers, but I feel like we did a good, I don't know, the good and the bad, and there is no clear answer, you know, but I don't think there's going to be.
I think it what good writing, like good literature, ish. I'm gonna try to use that word. I never pronounce eschews, like stays away from this didactic good guys, bad guys. Like I think she does a great job of, nope, the bad guys are really good and the good guys are really bad.
Yeah,
and that's okay. And we have to kind of sit with that a little bit. Like, this is the story that, like, when you go to the fridge for a glass of water later, you're like, I'm still thinking about those people. And I wonder if they're okay. Like, I wonder where it goes for them next. You know, I think that that's a cool, cool thing.
Yeah, because we just literally end with the circle and the fire. And we can only hope. We can hope for all of them, but we don't know.
I have more questions. This is good.
You do.
For good podcast, love you. No, it's good, good, good. So I guess that's it. Julie, I want to thank you again for coming on to the podcast today. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. This is my first, hooray, in podcasting.
Long time, first time. Would you be back? If we bring another one, would you bring it
if
back?
If you'll have me. I don't know if I did a good job, but if you have me, I'll
I don't know.
Do
our let the ratings decide.
Oh, God. Everyone who's,
if you like it, guys, if you're hearing good things.
Be kind.
Yeah, I'm going to say. Like, they don't know what they're talking about. Like, it wasn't actually about Catholicism at all. It was a story actually about, like, unicorns or, you know, rainbows.
Yeah, this is my very humble interpretation.
We do the best we could with what we have. And we apologize in advance for any mistakes. But please, if you want to talk further, message on Twitter. Julia, you're on Twitter. And
yes.
Your Twitter name is?
Ms. Struckley. Ms. Struckley. M-S and then capital S-T-R-U-K-E-L-Y 1.
Awesome. Ms. Struckley 1, and I'm on Twitter at @NeehanEDU. We're glad to talk about books or teaching or literature or a little bit
theology
of Catholicism.
We can do that.
And if you want to be a guest on the podcast, hit me up. We'd love to have you hang out. Julia, I would gladly have you back anytime.
Thank you.
You bet. I want to say thanks again. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe, like, leave a comment, let people know that it's not all bad. Or maybe it is. I don't know. And we'll be back next week with more. We want to say thank you again, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Bye.